This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. And this weekend is the anniversary of the, what can you call this thing? This explosion of white racial hatred in Charlottesville that our president referred to as some very fine people. The rise of hate on the right is, I mean, just astonishing since Trump's election. I have some statistics I'm going to share with you here in just a minute, but just this, I think a lot of this kind of came to the fore with Laura Ingraham's rant on Fox News day before yesterday, where, you know, she said the America we know and love is being wiped out, basically, by, you know, people of color coming here. Now, she said, this is not about race or class. But she might as well have just started, you know, it was so obvious that when she doubled down last night and said, well, I said it wasn't about race or class. It was like, yeah, all the people watching Fox are going, yeah, we know what's going on, Laura. It's all good. All these, white Fox viewers. This has the potential to really, really, really damage this country. And, you know, on the one hand, I mean, you know, as this is getting jacked up and brought out. On the other hand, it's always been here. I mean, this is a country founded in genocide of Native Americans and the slavery of Africans. And it's if we don't acknowledge that, and we don't look at how, as a consequence of the institutions that protected male white power at the conquering of this continent in the 1600s, through the 1700s, through the 1800s, through the 1900s, you know, yeah, it changed in its form. You know, it went from genocide to slavery we still, by and large, you know, herd Native Americans into reservations and redlining and all these other things that have happened historically, and continue to on a de facto rather than a de jure basis, you know, in actual fact rather than at law. We still have racial discrimination in this country. In fact, probably the largest area where that's happening is in our schools, because we still have a property tax-based school system, which, you know, was put into place from the get-go so that poor communities of color would have bad schools and wealthy white communities would have good schools. It was just that simple. I mean, that's why our schools, when we first, you know, in the late 19th century and throughout the early 20th century, while Woodrow Wilson was screening the, you know, Birth of a Nation in the White House, we set up a public education system nationwide that was specifically designed to enhance white privilege and to keep poor people, broadly speaking, but particularly poor people of color, down. And now we're seeing this. We're seeing this writ large. And there's all these dimensions to it. America's hate groups, this Abigail Hauslauner, this is writing about a year and a half ago in the Washington Post, America's hate groups and particularly anti-Muslim groups are on the rise. The SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, says that, you know, Trump has, quote, electrified the radical right. The report says hate groups in the United States, now keep in mind this is a year and a half ago, says hate groups in the United States nearly tripled last year, the number of hate groups. Nearly 50 of these new additions are just in and of itself are local chapters of ACT for America, an anti-Muslim group that Mike Flynn, yeah, the guy who was Trump's national security advisor, was a member of their board of directors. The Klan is actually losing members, or at least it was a year and a half ago. I don't know where they're at right now, but what had happened was people are taking a, quote, more intellectual approach, according to Mark Potok over at SPLC. He says that they're turning to think tanks and nonprofits, and they've rebranded themselves. He says the alternative right or alt-right is rebranding of white supremacy for public relations purposes. But there's all these new companies, Identity Europa in California, the 29 clubs created by the Daily Stormer website, the neo-Nazi website, which, by the way, changed its masthead. Again, this is a year and a half ago. I'm not sure if this is still the case. From the world's most visited alt-right website to America's number one most trusted Republican news source, the Daily Stormer. The FBI reported a 60% rise in hate crimes targeting Muslims in 2015. And in the first 34 days following Trump's election, over 1,097, quote, bias incidents, more than a third of those incidents, quote, directly referencing either Trump, his Make America Great Again slogan, or his infamous remarks about grabbing women by the genitals. We're seeing this over at, I don't have a link on this. Race-related crime, this is a California State University report. Race-related crimes up 12.5% last year in 2017. Here are some numbers here. Identity Dixie, this is current information. In 2017, completely new groups sprouted up. Patriot Front, the Fraternal Order of Alt Knights, Identity Dixie, and others. Groups that latch on to Trump flourished. Identity Europa went from one chapter in 2016 to 15 in 2017. The Right Stuff expanded from four chapters to 21 and spawned Identity Dixie. Vanguard America grew from 12 to 25. New voices like Mike Enoch became players in the movement. Richard Spencer, you know, Hail Victory, Hail Trump. Sieg Heil, by the way, is German for Hail Victory. Launched this big college tour. All this kind of stuff. I mean, this is growing. Meanwhile, the NFL began their preseason yesterday. And the Philadelphia Eagles, Malcolm Jenkins, Devontae Bosby, and Chris Long protesting. In this case, Chris Long had his hand on Bosby's shoulder while Bosby and Jenkins raised their fists during the pledge. Kneeling, the Miami Dolphins, Kenny Steele and Albert Wilson, and their teammate, Robert Quinn, raised a fist. So what does Trump do? He goes out and says, how dare they? They're defying a presidential order.
I am the emperor.
Speaking of which, just as an aside, just a quick aside, Louise and I were going someplace yesterday. We were going to dinner with our kids and listening to NPR and in the car. And there was a discussion, I believe this was on Terry Gross's show on Fresh Air. The fellow said that foreign governments have learned that Trump's foreign policy now is based on who likes him, who treats him well. So, you know, it's like everything is being personalized around Donald Trump. It's like he thinks he's the emperor. We're back to, you know, 300, 400, 500 years ago in Europe, where the royal families were absolute rulers, and the relationship between two different regions or countries or even kingdoms or counties with castles was based on who the king liked and who he didn't like. And it's one of the reasons why royal families are all intermarried all over Europe. You know, this family's cousin would marry that family's daughter or son or whatever, and by merging the families, now our countries are allies. It's all about, you know, dear leader. It's not about, I mean, this was before, you know, the rise of democratic republics. It was not about what are the policies. And our policies are all about dear leader. And dear leader is defining our foreign policy. Dear leader is now defining our, I'm not sure what you would call this, our perspective on race, I suppose. With Donald Trump's, you know, going after these guys, four members of the Jacksonville Jaguars, waited in the tunnel. Three members of the Seattle Seahawks did the same. And Trump is going after them personally.
I am their leader. I am der Führer is the word for leader, right? In German.
This is grim stuff. And not only that, reported hate crimes with racial or ethnic bias jumped the day after Trump was elected. They almost tripled. More hate crimes, more reported hate crimes on November 9th, 2016 than any other day that year. And then the Washington Post says, it's unclear why this would be. Really?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So there's a lot to talk about, but it's Anything Goes Friday, whatever you'd like. It's this weekend also the anniversary of the murder of Heather Heyer. And welcome back. Gordon in O'Brien, Oregon. Hey, Gordon, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's good to talk to you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the wildfires that are burning and the link to global warming.
Sure, go for it.
I think, you know, I enjoy your discussion on it, but I think one thing that's being left out is how many of the wildfires are human-caused. And across the country, it's like 84%, and in California, it's like 90%.
Yeah.
So global warming isn't starting most of the fires, but...
No, but it's facilitating them. You know, things like, I mean, one of these fires, I think it was the car fire, was caused by a tire blowing out.
And, yeah, that's right near
and,
me.
Yeah, but the reality is that, you know, cars, tires blow out and rims hit the pavement and throw sparks all the time. But they don't create forest fires unless all the grass around them is brown and tinder. So without global warming creating the conditions for these wildfires, you know, yeah, humans do a lot of things that involve fire or involve sparks or can cause fires. But, you know, we haven't. There hasn't been a sudden increase in human behavior that is fireworthy. What's increased is the vulnerability to fires as a consequence of global warming.
Well, yeah, I think what my point is that once the fires get started, be it human-caused or lightning-caused, then climate change takes over. But right now in California, there's 20 major fires, and only one of them, the Natchez Fire, which is just a few miles from me, was started by lightning.
Yeah.
The rest were human caused, which are either by accident or by arson, like the guy they arrested in Southern California.
Yeah.
You know, so, and the problem with the human caused wildfires is it takes resources away from the firefighters that are fighting the lightning caused fires.
Well, this is why we fund Smokey the Bear ads.
But
the reality is most human-caused fires are, the vast majority of them are not intentionally caused. And you know, very rarely are they intentionally caused. And sometimes they're just stupidity. I mean, we had a massive fire here in Oregon that was started by kids playing with fireworks.
The Eagle Fire last year up on the Columbia River east of Portland.
Yep.
Yeah, but that took resources away from the Chetco Bar Fire right west of me.
Right.
You know, they had to rush firefighters over there. So, you know, they have laws against starting fires, you know, and a lot of them, like you say, are accidental, unintentional, but people still violating the laws, like mowing the lawn when they're not supposed to and they hit a rock and it starts a spark. Every fire is a little tiny thing when they start, you know.
Well, the reality is that now that what used to be healthy green vegetation and healthy, you know, lush forests are tinderboxes, that our behavior, you know, rather than just being concerned about campfires, which is the classic Smokey the Bear thing, you know, we have to be concerned about anything that could be a source of ignition. But
right, and the fire season's a lot longer. It starts sooner and it lasts longer and it's more intense in, you know, July, August because of global climate change. But I think, you know, if people were more careful and didn't start so many fires, you know, that would be a different story in terms of the smoke and stuff.
Yeah, I don't disagree broadly speaking, Gordon, but, you know, how many of us know when we're going to have a flat tire?
Well, a lot of that's maintenance, you know.
Could be. Or, you know, it could be a stone on the road, you know, that you hit at 70 miles an hour and it blows your tire. I just think that I think, frankly, that the cause of these is global warming, even if it's a proximate cause rather than a direct cause. Because, you know, typically grass is not that easy to catch on fire. Gordon, all excellent points, though. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour, and let's pick up your calls. It's Anything Goes Friday, after all. Grace in Detroit. Hey, Grace, what's on your mind today?
Oh, good morning, Tom. I'm confused about the difference between a white supremacist and a nationalist. Now, We know, I mean, they can sit there in their articles and call them neo-Nazis, as what we saw in Charlottesville, marching on the church in the dark with their torches. But in the news, I'm not seeing the word white supremacist anymore. I'm seeing reference of neo-Nazism and stuff, but the news media seems to be turning away from the word white supremacist and using the word nationalist.
Right.
Which now, according to the Freedom of Speech Amendment, I may be wrong here, but I thought that your freedom of speech was guaranteed unless it results in violence, at which point then your speech is considered hate. So why is the media playing up the white supremacists as nationalists? I understand there's a fine line.
Yeah.
But if the media is going to start branding them as nationalists rather than supremacists, we're getting confused.
To a certain extent, yeah, I think your point is well taken, Grace. On the other hand, and nationalism, you know, broadly speaking, historically, nationalism means somebody who's in favor of their nation, who thinks that their nation should be their top priority. It should be first and foremost, the, you know, America first kind of thing. And it's arguably not a bad thing. I mean, nationalism can be really destructive or it can be really useful. You know, nations pull together. You know, during World War II, we all kind of came together and fought World War II. During the Great Depression, we all came together. And you could argue that those were dimensions of nationalism. But the place where these two lines intersect of white supremacy slash racism and love of country slash nationalism is when the foundation of your country is white supremacy. It's white supremacy and the doctrine of the divine right of white people to kill Native Americans, to take their land, the divine right of white people to own slaves, the divine white right of, or not so much divine, I suppose, but, you know, later that argument wasn't so explicitly made, but the right of white people to have segregated schools and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That increasingly is what these so-called nationalists are talking about. They, you know, they want to go back to this storied time. I mean, this is essentially Laura Ingraham's rant is, you know, everything changed in 1965 when we amended our immigration laws to say that we couldn't, that we were no longer just accepting immigrants from Europe. You know, now you could be an immigrant to the United States from Asia, from Africa, from South America, from anywhere in the world. It didn't matter the color of your skin any longer or the language that you spoke. And, you know, whereas prior to that, it pretty much did matter. And they're arguing to go back to that. And so what you're seeing is that nationalism has become a kind of stand-in for white supremacy. And I think that the media using that phrase is just an attempt to sanitize it, in my opinion, Grace.
Thank you. I think that's how I felt too. Is just kind of whitewash it.
Yeah. Yeah. No pun intended.
Make it normal,
yeah.
And it isn't normal.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Grace. Good to hear from you. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. In the wake of Laura Ingraham's hate-filled, outrageous racist remarks the other day on Fox, I'm thinking that Donald Trump is going to confuse her with that woman in her early 30s who got pulled over for DUI speeding, who was trying to get out of arrest and ticketing by claiming to the cops that she was a good white person with high educational pedigree,
yeah.
And I'm thinking what Donnie is going to do, he's going to tweet from the White House that Laura Ingraham is one of the good, you know, he defended those white racists last year by calling them the good people in there, too.
Yeah.
He's going to say something to the effect that Laura Ingraham is one of the good ones because she's not wearing a KKK cape.
Yeah, this is Lauren Elizabeth Cutshaw, who was arrested for drunk driving in Bluffton, South Carolina. And her boyfriend apparently is a cop. And she said, I'm a clean white girl. You're a cop. You should know what that means. I've had perfect grades my entire life. I attended a highly accredited university. I'm a very clean, thoroughbred white girl.
Yeah, you'd never find either of these women connected to the white morons who go beating up liberals and running over people.
No, I'm sure that that's the case. And she was, you know, shocked that she would be treated the way that she apparently thinks that people who aren't clean white girls are treated. And, you know, hopefully this is a lesson in her own white privilege. But it's, you know, what was the larger point, Johnny, you were making around that?
The larger point is Donnie is clueless, and he's going to tweet proving that.
Who is clueless?
Don, in the White House.
Oh, Donnie.
Will not report to the president.
Yeah, yeah.
Donald Trump will tweet.
Yeah, could have bones.
Laura Ingraham's defense. Yeah. Claiming she's one of those good white nationalists.
Has he? I haven't seen a tweet from him in her defense. Have you?
Say that again.
I have not seen a tweet from Trump in Ingraham's defense.
He's consulting his dictionary right now.
Okay. Yeah, some variation on Covfefe, no doubt. Johnny, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back with more of your calls. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, taking back the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Speaking the truths, the multinational corporations, and I suppose the white supremacists would really rather you didn't know. We'll be right back. So Laura Ingraham comes out and says, you know, America is demographically shifting. Well, demographics have to do with race, gender, and what else? What am I missing here? Maybe income? Is that really it? And it has to do with people coming from overseas. So what? We're getting too many women? We're getting too many maybe poor people? But I mean, traditionally immigrants, my father's father, my paternal grandfather came here from Norway in 1917, broke, right? Along with his three brothers. It's broke, but that's the immigrant story. That's a good thing, I think, isn't it? We want, Trump wants to change it to a merit-based system. So Laura is, out doing this rant, and now David Duke has endorsed her, which raises the question, and she's backpedaling as fast as she can, but this raises the question, is Fox News complicit in the next hate crime? The next Heather Heyer who is murdered, God forbid. But, you have to acknowledge that this is a very real possibility. To what extent does Fox News bear responsibility for this? And, I think that's a really important question. Tony in Huntsville, Alabama. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Good. What's up?
I was just wondering if anybody ever thinks about the economics of racism in terms of your everyday job. The guy who finally got a great job and a great family and a nice home and a decent neighborhood, does he really want to hear about white supremacy and killing people and ruining his life and ruining his economics and all the rest of this stuff? Because people forget that the black community alone is worth billions of dollars a year to corporations.
Yeah, probably trillions.
Remember Cadillac back in the day, how they associated blacks with Cadillacs because Cadillac was smart enough to market directly to black people, and they got filthy, filthy rich because of it.
Yeah.
Is the point
that you're making, Tony, that when people have good jobs and they can provide for their families and they get some, satisfaction from their work and they're not economically insecure, that they're less likely to they're less likely to ask themselves the question, why do I have it so hard? Why do I have it so bad? And then they're less likely to latch on to answers like, oh, it's those people of color taking my job or competing with me for a slot in college or, fill in the blank. They're less likely to go into the blame game, and therefore they're less likely to engage in this kind of racist behavior. Is that your point?
Yeah, that is one of my points. The other one, well said, Tom. The other point is, most of this stuff is fear-based. I'm so scared that I'm not going to make it. Oh my God, what am I going to do if that guy?
Yeah.
It's just all fear-based. And I thought that Christianity was supposed to be the answer to all of this fear-based stuff. It's like now there's a spirit of fear over the whole nation that nobody now is talking about the stuff that we used to talk about, pulling each other up by the bootstrings, or guys like Tony Robbins or Matthew Silver who could say you could still be a success in this nation. And why aren't we hearing that stuff anymore? Is it more profitable to, I guess, anyone just to hate? Is that more profitable? Do you want to know that your neighbor has an AK and a swastika and ready to go to war with another race at any time while you're trying to build a nice life?
Yeah.
I mean, that's real question.
I think the reason why, I mean, we're looking at the predictable consequence of about 40 years of libertarian economics, of hard right economics, of trickle-down economics, of supply-side economics, of elevate the rich and crush the poor economics, and crush the working class, and a 70-year campaign or longer by the Republican Party explicitly to destroy unions in the United States. I mean, we're down to 6%, you know, union density in the United States right now. We were over 30%. We were a third of American workers, you know, the day that Ronald Reagan came into office, were unionized, which means two-thirds of Americans had a good union job or its equivalent. And as a consequence of this, I mean, this is hitting the so-called white middle class hard. I mean, it's hitting the black middle class too. But this was a policy that was put into place by the Republicans specifically to defund unions, to destroy unions, to defund the Democratic Party. Pure and simple. The major source of income for the Democratic Party in 1980 were unions. So what does Reagan do? He goes after unions. You destroy unions, you destroy the middle class. You destroy the middle class, those people who used to have a decent living, those people who, you know, for three, four, five generations had every child could, you know, fairly predictably do better than his or her parents' generation. You know, when that trend reversed, and it took, you know, 10, 20 years for Reaganomics to really settle in and really, you know, start claiming its damage to the American middle class. As that set in, you know, more and more people were looking around going, what the hell happened? You know, why does my life not work? Why can't I get a decent job? Where, you know, why is my pay so low? Blah, 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 blah. And instead of answering that question, and the media is there to help them, right, answer the question, instead of answering that question with, oh, it's because the Republicans destroyed your union, you've got this whole media machine that's out there saying, oh, it's because of people of color. You get, you know, lawsuits from that guy at the University of Michigan saying, you know, well, you know, I couldn't go to college because a black guy went to college. And, you know, how dare that happen? And you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that, you know, I think that there's an economic basis to much, not certainly not all, and maybe not even most, but to much of the racial resentments that have been that are growing in the United States. And then you get people like Donald Trump and the modern day Republican Party stepping in, and this is where, you know, the Koch brothers put this on steroids by embracing the Tea Party and pouring, you know, millions and millions of dollars into the early Tea Party. Then you get this explosion of a racialized rhetoric that is used by a political party for political purposes and used by political candidates for political purposes. And you know, and this is the predictable outcome of it, Tony. Seems to me.
Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, listen, here's the thing. I told you once before in a conversation that we had that I had did prison time here in this state of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out. I was deemed unemployable because I had felonies. But because I started a small company of my own, you know, I was homeless for a year. Now I have a Mercedes, a BMW, and a Jaguar all
Whoa.
At the same time. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
It overwhelmed me, but I pulled myself up. I was unemployable, so I had to go to work and work for myself. It forced me to do something else. My question is this.
If I may, Tony, are you sure that it forced you, or would it be more appropriate to say that you had access to the resources and the energy and the intellectual capacity and the enthusiasm and the entrepreneurial ability to do this. And that's something that not everybody has, regardless of race.
Exactly. And you are so eloquent. You say it so well. But I had the desire, and I knew that I had to come up with another plan.
Right.
I knew that I couldn't have those corporate jobs anymore, and I was willing to do what I had to do to try to better myself, but I wasn't saying it was because of somebody else.
Yeah.
And I knew I had bills to pay.
Yeah. But you've got a lot of kind of burned out white people who don't have entrepreneurial skills, don't even have the intellect to be an entrepreneur. And, they're just, looking around going, okay, who's to blame for my situation?
And that is a sad state of affairs
to be in.
And then you can't say America is failing you. You're failing America because you haven't taken that opportunity or that chance or used whatever you have to try to do something else.
Well, and we have to evolve. Yeah, and these white people who are out there marching, I mean, they've got all this white privilege, that they could, theoretically use. It's just the whole thing
and they're wasting it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds kind of crass to say it that way, but it's true.
D.L. Hughley made a joke. He said, all these white supremacists are wasting their white skin. Don't waste it, use it. You're wasting it.
Yeah.
It sounds like a joke.
Yeah, except that then saying, go ahead and use it is almost like saying, well, it's a good thing that it's there, and I certainly don't want to be saying that. But you get what I'm saying. And Tony, I need to move along and get some other, voices in here. But, thank you. Very, very well said.
Thank you, Tom.
Spot on. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Billy, it says here you want to disagree with me. Billy in Wimberley, Texas. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Listen, you started your show with another rant on white hate, and that assertion is utterly false. When you look at what's going on with the left these days and how with Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the new Black Panther Party movement and attacks against Trump voters and attacks against the
Billy,
the
when
Trump.
when did it become hate to say, stop trying to kill me?
Who's trying to kill somebody, Tom?
Well, look at all these unarmed black men who've been killed all over the United States. Look at by police, but not just police. I mean, look at the daily violence that is visited on people of color in this country. How is it hate
color,
to say,
Tom?
Stop that, please?
By other people of color, Tom?
How is it hate to say, stop killing me, stop hurting me, stop depriving me of rights and abilities because of my race, because of my ethnicity, because I'm from another country? How is that hate? I don't get it, Billy.
That statement or that question would not be hate. But when you're attacking prayer groups, when Antifa goes in and attacks a prayer group, that's hate.
Are you talking about the so-called patriot prayers, these people who pretend to be Christians that Jesus Christ would have walked away from?
I'm talking about Antifa. I'm talking about Black Lives Matter. I'm talking about
none of those groups advocate violence
about Donald Trump in order to destroy him. That's hate.
When you
burn an American flag in front of a bunch of soldiers and a bunch of prayerful people, that's hate.
I would say when you wrap yourself in the American flag and use it to promote racism, that's hate. When you wrap yourself in the American flag and say, I'm more patriotic than you are because my skin is a lighter color, that's hate. Billy, I'm not buying it, and I don't think anybody else is either. Well, of course, the people over on Fox, call Laura Ingraham. I'm sure she'd love to hear your message. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, talk media for the rest of us, 46 and a half minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave. Dave, you're listening on Sirius. Let me put you on hold and we'll pick you up. Oop, I hung up on him. Dave, call us right back. I'm sorry. That was entirely my fault. Lisa in Niles, Ohio. Hey, Lisa, you're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Good morning, Tom. Well, I like to ponder the future, and as far as the midterms and the outcome of that, I think we have to start with a couple givens. Trump and his supporters, Fox News, of course, they will do absolutely anything to keep him in power, proof was Nunes at that last rally. But so I agree with you that he's, of course he would get us involved in a war, possibly declare martial law. If it looks like, you know, he's going to lose Congress and the eventuality, probably impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say that's quite upsetting to me. But I'm starting to see some hope here.
I'd love to hear some hope.
Yeah, don't we all need it? Well, it's little things, court rulings mostly.
Mm-hmm.
The judge that just stopped the mother and child that were being deported.
Yeah.
In the middle of that was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's little things happening. And not to mention just people see his lies. Trump and his supporters are a small minority, and people aren't buying anymore. We're just not going to put up with it, and I hope it doesn't lead to a violent end. But I have faith that, you know, it's common sense versus this lunacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hope and pray that our American values and common sense and the structure of our democracy will win in the end.
Yeah.
And I have to have faith in that.
Okay. Cool. Lisa, broadly speaking, I agree with you. I think that America is very resilient. I think that we have a core set of values that were articulated at the founding of this country, imperfectly acted out. But, you know, over time, we've brought those core values into more and more of our behavior. And I'm optimistic, too. Thank you very much for the call. Mary in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Mary, thanks for watching us on Facebook Live. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? I'm gonna make it fast and try to hit on as many points as possible because we've had some great callers today that have brought up a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
First, when you were talking about how a lot of people say white, I get so sick and tired of that one. It's actually there's five European powers that have spread themselves across the world. And in every one of their documents, it stated that we need to eradicate the colors by separating the children from the elderly, steal all their medicine, kill all the elderly. And then when the children try to go back and marry into the families, they can't. So three generations, we bleed the black out. And
where did you find this, Mary?
I have government documents. I collect antique history books. And in those history books, it says England's major goal was not to conquer America, but to bleed the color out through three generations. And we're still doing it in Africa. All the five major powers are still doing it in Africa.
What book are you quoting from?
If you want to check it out, the Rabbit Fence would be a good documentary to explain it.
The Rabbit Fence with an F?
From the Australian point of view.
The Rabbit Fence with an F?
Yeah, it's fence. Called The Rabbit Fence. And you watch that documentary and you'll find it.
I'll check it out. Mary, I got to run. Thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday. And Marvin in Idaho. Hey, Marvin, what's up? Marvin, you're on the air. Marvin is not on the air. Well, he is in a way, but apparently not listening. Steve in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Good morning. I wanted to get your take on the fact that I heard the other night that the Senate Judiciary Democrats are having to file Freedom of Information Act to just simply get
Brett Kavanaugh's records.
Kavanaugh.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And because
that's the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
I agree. The administration is saying that they don't want to turn over the records when Brett Kavanaugh was inside the Bush administration, George W. Bush administration. He was one of the senior advisors to the president, and he was involved in writing the torture policy from everything that I can see. And they don't want this stuff to come out. They don't want it being held up to the light of day. And so they are fighting it. And yes, there are outside groups that are subpoenaing or that are FOIA-ing these things, using the Freedom of Information Act to get this information. And, you know, the question is, will they get the information before the confirmation hearings? And, you know, if the Republicans have anything to say about it, the answer is no. But, you know, we need to keep pulling on this, because this guy apparently has a really, really sleazy history. Steve, excellent point. Thanks for bringing it up. Lisa in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Lisa, you wanted to respond to Billy?
This is Barry from Texas. And by the way, hi, Tom. I listen to you all the time and very loyal.
Oh, thank you.
I wonder if Billy thought that when Barack Obama was put into the White House and the Republican Party made it their mission to bring him down and destroy everything he did, which included throwing the country under the bus. I wonder if Billy thought that was hate.
Good question. Did you say you are Mary from Texas?
No, I'm Lisa from Seattle.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
I was responding to Barry from Texas, an earlier caller.
Okay, I got it. The whole birther thing, too. I mean, you know, that was just unvarnished, you know, racial dog whistle. And Donald Trump was all over that, as was Fox News and most of the Republican Party. You know, oh, my God, we've got a black man in the White House. There must be something wrong. It must be fraud. It must be a scheme, right? It's not supposed to be that way. Mm-hmm. This isn't, you know, et cetera. Yeah, excellent point.
And their outrage about us standing up for ourselves, I guess, you know, it's okay when they do whatever they can for their cause. But if a liberal stands up to themselves, oh, my gosh, the hate, the violence.
Yeah, I know.
I'm tired of it.
It's projection in the classic Freudian sense. It is projection. Lisa, thank
you. It is.
Very well said. Let's see here. David in California. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi. I want to give you an anecdote, something that happened to me. This was back in 1979. Back then, you know, now you wouldn't ask an employee, a prospective employer would not ask a question like this. But I went on a job interview driving a delivery truck for office supplies. Mm-hmm. And this guy told me, says, you know, that's a very unusual name. What nationality is it? I told him, you know, it was Spanish. My grandparents had immigrated from Chihuahua, Mexico. Mm-hmm. And he proceeded to say, well, you know, you speak English very well for one of your people, but I'm looking for somebody with a good head for business.
Really?
And what I take from that is
because you had a Hispanic last name?
Yeah. It's not easily recognized as Spanish, though.
Uh-huh.
And this guy honestly thought he was paying me a compliment. This gives me a perspective on Trump voters. Even the media will report to you, oh, well, it's not about race. It's about economic this and economic that.
Right.
But no, it's about race. And these people, it's not racism if those people are inferior to you. And that's just a truth to them.
Right. In their world. I mean, they're good point, David. It's
And this is true of most of the Trump, Trump supporters. I know some of them who are actually friends of mine.
Yeah.
And to them, I'm a good Mexican. I'm okay.
Oh, geez. Yeah, David, thank you. What was the phrase? The soft bigotry of low expectations that, you know, goes back. Actually, that was a phrase that was used by the right, I think, to describe people who were trying to reform our schools and things. Remarkable. Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. 3 hours with you. Your calls, your thoughts, my thoughts. I've got a big pile of the news of the day, too, here. We'll be getting to it as we continue through the program, so stick around. It's coming up on 2 minutes before the hour, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.